Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Beat Hill, and this is the D-Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to the D-Word Podcast, where this week I'm hoping to raise the profile of the excellent Admiral Nurse Service run by Dementia UK, with the help of my guest, Mark Challoner. So how did Mark become an Admiral Nurse?
Oh, thanks for the invite, Pete. I mean, I'm really pleased to be here today on the D-Word, and, you know, and thanks for promoting dementia and, you know, and support around it. Now, I suppose it's quite a long story, to be honest, Pete. I mean, I started my nurse training in the late 80s. I trained as a registered mental health nurse in 1989 and worked in the NHS for about 30 odd years, managing services, inpatient services, community services in Lincolnshire. And at the age of 55, I was fortunate enough to be able to take my my pension. But, you know, taking a pension, I didn't for one minute think that I'd end up, you know, finishing my nursing career. I really saw it as the opportunity to try different things. And, you know, I was aware that there was a new Admiral Nursing Service that was starting in Lincolnshire, Pete. And it's a completely new service. So I applied for the post, and I was fortunate enough to get that. And I worked for Lincolnshire for about 3 years as an Admiral Nurse, visiting patients and families with dementia in the community. And absolutely love it, Pete. I absolutely love the job. It's great being an Admiral Nurse. It's so rewarding, and effectively going out and trying to give people hope and inspiration and helping them along their patient journey in terms of dementia has been really, really beneficial, not just obviously for families, but for myself as well. So having done that for 3 years, there were a few issues around the contract. And, you know, I wanted to carry on as an Admiral Nurse. It was a 2-year project that was extended to 3 years. And then a post came up on the Admiral Nurse Helpline, which is where I am now, Pete. And I've been here since February 2022. So, yeah, quite a different role to community. Effectively, what we do is that we provide a service to anybody throughout the UK. We also take international calls. Anybody that's affected by dementia, we will take people's calls, and that can be professionals, it can be people living with dementia themselves, but it also predominantly is around carers who are ringing in full support about dementia. So, yeah, and again, a really rewarding job and a brilliant organisation, I will say, Dementia UK. Very much focus on, you know, health, well-being. We get lots of breaks. We get absolutely loads of support in terms of training and education. So, you know, we're always, I hope, up to date in terms of dementia and, you know, and regulations and, you know, new things that are coming through the pipeline. So, yeah. Yeah, that's my story.
Interesting you say that. I mean, because, you know, you must be faced with a variety of problems, and it's kind of equally important that you get the downtime as well, having, you know, faced some pretty difficult issues, I guess.
Yeah, and again, Dementia UK are absolutely fantastic. So, you know, whereas the NHS sometimes works around targets and things, you never get that sense when you work with Dementia UK. It's all about personal well-being. And I think, you know, if I'm being honest, Pete, I think before I became a nurse on the Admiral Nurse Helpline, I suppose a lot of my support to families was seeing people face-to-face. And I suppose in those early stages, I did think that potentially working on a helpline and not being able to see people may prove to be challenging. But you know what? It's almost the exact opposite. So, you know, I work in a team that, although we're home-based, we're all home-based on the helpline, you never get a sense that you're ever on your own. So you've always got the opportunity to discuss with colleagues. We have two clinical managers who are on shifts as well. So if there's a problem or it's a challenge or you take a difficult call, we're always encouraged to take some downtime, as you described, Pete, reflect on some of them calls, but have the opportunity to discuss with, 16 other colleagues who are with me on that helpline. So absolutely huge amounts of support. And, whilst it's exhausting and, taking very difficult calls can be very emotive, I never get the sense that I'm ever on my own.
Yeah, I think it's great to have that level of support in, it's such a wide area. I mean, so many types of dementia, so many types of problems. And also, carers often find it very isolating, don't they, when their loved one has had a diagnosis. Some people can really feel on their own.
Yeah, absolutely, Pete. And we don't just see people in terms of diagnosis. We see a lot of people who ring in with, pre-diagnosis calls. They might have seen, for example, I took a call recently from a gentleman who was in his 30s. He'd watched the television program about Steve Thompson, who developed dementia as a consequence of playing rugby. He was worried about, he'd played rugby for most of his life. Am I going to develop dementia? So we take people, we have conversations with people at different parts of their dementia journey. We get a lot of calls from people in that early diagnostic stage. So that diagnostic stage in terms of that transition is really difficult for people. So, of course, when you're told by a memory clinic or a GP that you've got dementia, you can imagine, Pete, just how many emotions and thoughts that are going through people's heads. And, and effectively what they do is they will ring Dementia UK and say, what do I do? Where do I go from here? What help can I get? Tell me about the diagnosis. What do I need to expect? What medications are available? What financial situations can you help me with? What benefits am I entitled to? There's so many questions. So getting a diagnosis is probably one of the main reasons why people ring the helpline, Pete. We get a lot of calls around emotional support. And do you know what? Actually, lots of carers out there are providing fantastic support to people with dementia. And often my calls are about what we call validation. So it's actually just saying to the carer, do you know what? You're doing a fantastic job. Maybe tweak it, try this with communication, try these sort of strategies. But you know what? Many people understand a lot about dementia. And part of our role is around educating them, but as I say, validating that information and supporting them along that journey. Now, any call to the dementia helpline as well, Pete, is not just a one-off. Effectively, we have callers that ring in frequently. We have new callers that ring in, and it's, it's an open book, really. We don't discriminate. If people want to ring us every day, then that's absolutely fine. Even sometimes twice or three times a day, and that's absolutely fine. We're here to try and support as best as we can.
Yeah, I think, sometimes the social aspects are, to my mind, ignored. And it's so important just that, simple things like just having a chat with somebody on the phone.
Yeah. I suppose those issues came to the forefront, Pete, through COVID, because, of course, when people were very much isolated, living in their own homes, suddenly being with their partner 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not being able to go out, that lifeline in terms of just picking up that phone in terms of social support was very much underestimated. I suppose in some respects, COVID also had the advantage of bringing people closer together. So in effect, people did tend to spend more time apart from each other, especially those with dementia, where COVID sort of brought those people together. So it had a bit of a double effect, a double whammy effect in terms of support. But yeah, I mean, again, we should never underestimate that social aspect of conversation, because as human beings we crave conversation, we love being with people, we love reciting our stories. And you know what, people with dementia are no different. They've got life stories, they've got histories, and as a helpline, Admiral Nurse, we're always encouraging people to tell us their stories so that we can try and help them along that journey. And you know what? We hear some fantastic stories. We have celebrities that ring in as well. You know, people who tell me about things that they've done in the past. You know, and it's very enlightening. And you know what? It can be really humorous as well. So, you know, dementia is often classed as doom and gloom, but you know what? There's many happy stories out there. And caring brings about new challenges for people. But you know what? People embrace it with open arms. And yeah, I'm humbled sometimes by the stories that I hear on the helpline, Pete.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've hit a nail on the head there for me, because when I was working, managing activity groups for people living with dementia, it's really strange to say, but it was a fun experience. We had so many laughs and so much humour. And I think it's really important that we don't lose sight of that and just, you know, concentrate, as you say, on the doom and gloom.
Yeah. And so reciting those stories, I often have a laugh and a joke with carers on the phone, you know, and it can be something simple as, you know, I went to the fridge and the remote control was in there, or even people with dementia can laugh at their own challenges, I guess. But, you know, sometimes it's about just that human reaction. You know, there's an acknowledgement that, yeah, dementia care is serious, but at the end of the day, it's also about embracing those changes. You know, and we have a strapline in Dementia UK that you can live life well with dementia. You know, and if I talk about some of my experiences as a community psychiatric nurse when I worked in the NHS, do you know what? Almost all of those people that I supported lived at home. So, you know, when you talk about statistical figures, 2/3 of those people with dementia are at home. There's only a third that end up going in residential care. But of course, it's that type of figure that gets the bad media, that you ultimately, if you get dementia, you're going to end up in care. But the reality is that people can live quite happily lives, sometimes with support, living in their own homes. You know, and there's nothing better than routine and familiarity when somebody has dementia, because, of course, that's the type of ecosystem that they're in terms of support and friends around them and familiarity with households and where things are. You know, absolutely, it is very much about trying to support people at home as long as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's very important for, you know, lots of reasons, financial reasons, social reasons, and also, you know, the carer, because that when it does come to that decision to put somebody in residential care, I mean, that is such an enormous decision, an enormous amount of pressure on a carer to make that decision.
Yeah, it's huge, Pete. We get many carers ringing through to the helpline who are distraught in some respects, feeling really guilty about a sense that you know, they can't carry on any longer, then this is a criticism of their caring capabilities. So that transition into care is really difficult. And actually, you know, we do see cases where people go into care and really do struggle themselves with dementia to be able to transition into that, seeing new faces, new routines. You know, can you imagine a world where somebody's getting you out of bed, a stranger, you know, giving you medication that you don't necessarily want? It's really, really difficult making that transition. But, you know, I will say also, though, Pete, that although I'm talking about residential care per se, I will say that often, sometimes people going in residential care can also be beneficial. So often people who live on their own with dementia, for example, maybe reticent about going into care, but of course, when they get there in the, you know, in the surroundings of other ladies and gentlemen, that somebody to communicate with, somebody's providing them with their meals and support. Often people describe it as a bit of a hotel, and you know what? Some people really flourish in residential care as well. So, you know, it works both ways, really. But yeah, we work a lot with carers in helping them with that transition. you know, when we try and make it as seamless as possible as well, Pete, so that, you know, although the person is going into residential care, we never see that as the, I suppose, as the final point. In effect, we encourage carers to keep in contact with the residential home, to do what we call life story work, you know, articulating how the person is with dementia, how they were before dementia, sharing some of those memories, using things like memory boxes, using things like photographs, you know, trying to make that environment in the residential home as much as possible as being a little bit like at home. I know that's not easy, but that transition is really important. And, you know, people still go and see their loved ones in residential care. Sometimes, you know, some people visit two or three times a day, and that's absolutely fine. You know, making that transition is difficult.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, I've got personal experience with my own mother-in-law. And it's interesting what you said, because she did actually flourish when she moved into residential care, because before residential care, she was stuck in a bigger house in North London, carers coming in four times a day. And she didn't really have a social life at all. Whereas, you know, when she moved into residential care, she was baking cakes, she was doing all sorts of stuff. So I think it's a really important message that people can still flourish, even in a, you know, in a care setting.
Absolutely, Pete. Yeah.
Now, am I right in thinking that you were the UK's first male admiral nurse?
No, that's not correct, I'm afraid.
Right.
I can't take credit for that, Pete. I can say that I was the. In 2022, I was the only male substantive member of staff that worked on the helpline. There's many esteemed male colleagues that have come before me, Pete, so I'm afraid I can't take credit for that. So when I started in February 2022, yes, I was the only male member of staff on the helpline. And since then, I've got some fantastic male colleagues that have now joined me on the helpline. But yeah, I suppose I can take a bit of credit for 2022, but no more, I'm afraid.
You know, I mean, nursing is often perceived as a kind of female dominated profession. But I guess that, you know, there are real advantages of having male admiral nurses. I kind of turn to my own experience when I was working managing activity groups. It was a total female-dominated staff, apart from myself. And I found that very quickly I had a magnet of gentlemen coming towards me wanting to talk about football and music and, you know, it's probably a bland phrase, but sort of blokey things. And they found it really a real advantage to you know, have a fellow chap to share things with.
Yeah, yeah. There's an interesting case study on the Dementia UK website of a gentleman that I supported who you know, thankfully has been able to support Dementia UK, but his father lived in Spain, and he was very much into cars and that sort of thing with his dad, and it was almost an immediate affiliation in terms of the conversation that we were able to have in terms of the helpline. And you know, he was. I was grateful for, you know, the positive comments and the nice things that he said about the support that he received. But you know what? It works both ways as well. You know, yes, I think that there are certainly men. I mean, we know, you're absolutely right, Pete, that predominantly that nursing is a female profession without a doubt. And that sort of, I suppose, that resonates also in terms of caring responsibilities that predominantly females tend to provide that level of care to male husbands, spouses, etc. But it is a different mindset. And you know what I've often found with male carers, and when they ring, they're often surprised about hearing a male voice at the end. But they really struggle sometimes emotionally to be able to just say, "Do you know what? I'm really struggling. Can you help?" And once they make that first step, it's almost like the floodgates open. So they become more receptive then to talking about their particular problems. And, you know, and good examples are that male carers often find it difficult to instigate you know, I suppose personal tasks with the person with dementia when they're female. So showering, washing, personal hygiene are real personal intrusive tasks that often male carers really struggle with. But, you know, you're right, Pete. So, you know, part of that affiliation is about, you know, talking about sports or football or, you know, just those things. Sometimes politics, although we try and veer away from that where we can, but carers just, that they want to weigh in. And once they realise that we are human at the end of the line, that's, as I say, often when the floodgates open, and then the carers can articulate and tell us their story in more depth. But and I will say, being one of only a few male members of staff, do you know what, it's great working in a diverse community as well within Dementia UK, because I was one of only a few male nurses working in the NHS, but to be honest, I'd rather work in a female environment rather than just all males or all females, for example.
Yeah, I think, we're both along those lines, because, I think it is very good to work in a diverse workforce. I mean, how do you get more men involved then in, you know, doing the kind of thing that you're doing? Because I think still we live in this world where it's kind of not thought that, you know, a male would go into a nursing profession.
Yeah, as I say, I think it's something that's particularly unique to the caring profession. But I suppose when I think back to my earlier days of the late 80s when I did my training, again, training was very much dominated by female members of staff. But I think we're seeing changes, Pete. I think over the years that more male staff are realizing that this is very much a justifiable profession, and as I say, we just offer something slightly different in terms of care that we provide. There are some carers that ring in, Pete, who will only speak to a female, and you know what, I don't have any problems with that. But again, likewise, sometimes male carers ring in and, you know, although they don't necessarily ask for a male, they are sometimes surprised when a male member of staff picks up that phone. So, yeah, diversity is really important in today's society. And, I think what I would say, hand on heart, is that more males are certainly coming into the nursing profession, and for the right reasons, I would say.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
In terms of, you know, contacting the Admiral Nursing Service, you go to the memory clinic, you get a diagnosis. My kind of mind is someone should, you know, is there someone there that says, hey, here's Dementia UK, got a problem, phone them and they can, you know, deal with all of this. Because it's sometimes, to me, you know, my own experience seems a bit disjointed. My experience of dementia was to receive two sheets of paper about my mother-in-law, which basically talked about diagnosis, and thank you very much. And kind of at that point, you know, it's then again back on the carer to, you know, look up the internet or whatever. Whereas, you know, I feel it should be a kind of seamless process.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Pete. And I think, I'm sorry for your experience. We hear similar calls from people who ring into the helpline, like you say, who just get a leaflet that explains what dementia is and, you know, go away and, you know, there's not a lot more we can do. I mean, I'm going to defend the NHS in the, I guess the role around dementia care is very much about assessment, diagnosis, and treatment. You know, and actually, you know, they do a fantastic job in terms of looking at that, about providing that thorough diagnosis, which is quite a lengthy process. You know, even involves CT scans and, you know, and also, you know, there are some types of medication that can help people, especially with particular types of medication. particular types of dementia, like Alzheimer's, for example. You know, so they do a sterling job in terms of providing that diagnostics and treatment. And I guess in terms of the support, I suppose that's where Dementia UK fill in that gap, I guess, so that, you know, somebody's got a diagnosis, well, what's next? You know, and although we work in terms of whole system methodology around family support, most of our care is focused on the role of the carer. And the reason why we do that, Pete, is that, you know, there's this notion really that if you can support the carer to support the person with dementia, then effectively what you're doing is that by indirect support, you're actually helping that person with dementia to remain at home. Because if you can skill the carer and help them understand, for example, communication, validation, understanding the signs and symptoms, what you're doing is making their life easier in which to provide that level of care to their loved one, their spouse, the person that they're looking after with dementia. So, yeah, I mean, we help with medications and treatment. We can advise in relation to that, but predominantly that is the role of the memory clinic. I think you use the word seamless, Pete, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of, I suppose, future. You know, where do we go in terms of dementia care? And absolutely, I think that we need integrated services that bring services together. I mean, our community, Admiral Nurses, work quite closely with you know, community mental health teams, adult social care. But it would be nice at some time in the future, Pete, that we ended up with a service that was completely integrated so that, you know, we all, in some respects, have a particular part to play in that dementia journey. You know, our focus is predominantly on the family. But as I say, I don't want to undermine the role of the NHS and adult social care, because they've got their own skill set, and they do that fantastically well, albeit with limited resources, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I think, you know, the story you tell there, I talk to people all over the world, and it is very similar. There's a real similarity between the way, you know, things are treated in that manner. I mean, in terms of, you know, you talk to a lot of people in terms of awareness of dementia and, you know, the removal of the stigma of dementia. Do you think that's improved over the years?
I personally think it has, Pete. I suppose if I talk about my early experiences of the late 80s, then dementia was seen very much in terms of a biological model, a medical model, you know, that when somebody had dementia, that effectively it was a disease that couldn't be treated and there's not a lot you could do. And, you know, in my training, I remember going on to long stay wards. We used to call them elderly mentally ill wards, which is a horrible term. But since, you know, we've moved on from that. But in those days, people with dementia were grouped together and it was almost a case of TLC, you know, dare I say, tender loving care, feeding, washing, dressing, and I think as services have progressed, I mean, we need to acknowledge a gentleman called Tom Kitwood, of course, who was the pioneer of dementia care in 1997, who moved away from what we call this old culture of care to embrace the new culture, which basically said that, you know, dementia in itself shouldn't be seen as an illness. What we should be doing is acknowledging it, how it must be for that person in terms of having that dementia themselves. So almost to try and put ourselves in their shoes and imagine what it must be like when you're getting up in the middle of the night or even in the day when you're quite confused, you're disorientated, you can't make sense of what's going on around you, people are talking incessantly at you, people are saying, you do you know what the day is or whatever? And you can understand how threatening and how frightening that must be to have dementia. So Tom Kitwood really talked about what we call person-centred care, and that was about really putting the person with dementia central to everything that we do, you know, and acknowledging really that people with dementia are still human beings. They have needs, they have love, they need attachment, they need identity, they need roles, they need comfort, they need love. You know, and that shouldn't be any different when somebody has dementia. And I think that's where we're moving away, Pete, from this notion of, you know, biomedical care to one that's very much about embracing person-centered care and putting the person focus. So, you know, we don't talk about challenges in dementia care, because often the old way of talking about challenges with dementia was that the person was challenging, which is quite a derogatory term, because, you know, Tom Kitwood, and what we try and talk about now is that when people are trying to communicate with dementia, that they've got an unmet need. And actually, that unmet need sometimes comes out in terms of the way that they speak and the way that they try and articulate their messages. And it's about trying to understand exactly what that unmet need is about, and then trying to enter their world of reality and try and understand it from their point of view. And that's what a lot we do in terms of what are called validation, Pete, and communication strategies. So that when you change that focus and you talk about person with dementia, or, you know, living with dementia, then it's very, very different, and it's a different mindset as well.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, I have friends living with dementia. One of them said to me, I wish someone would concentrate on what I can still do, not what I can't do.
Yeah, and that's very much based on, again, the old adage, the old culture was very much based on a disability model. And you're absolutely right, Pete. So this is about understanding strengths, really, about building on those strengths. And, you know, many, many people, and I said this at the beginning of the conversation, but many people with dementia can live quite happily within their own home with some support, with, you know, as long as they're familiar and understand those routines, then, yeah, that's very much based on their strengths. And it's very much about trying to keep that person at home as long as possible, and not obviously disempowering them and making decisions on their behalf, about trying to involve them as much in every conversation that you have.
Yeah, I think that's a very important message. Time, sadly, is bringing us to a close. It's been fascinating, Mark. Thank you so much for being my guest on the show. And as we say to everybody, or your colleagues at Dementia UK and you yourself, please keep on doing what you're doing.
That's absolutely fine. Can I just finish by saying that at the moment we are running a campaign. Pete, is it okay if I just say a few words about that? So the Dementia UK campaign is I Live With Dementia. And what it's doing is highlighting the vital support that the charity offers in terms of helping people with dementia. Also about, you know, I suppose, talking about Admiral Nurses. Now, there are some billboards that are going out, electronic billboards. There's also some videos. We're also publishing our first TV advert about dementia. So, again, I would. I suppose my message is to people, if you're really struggling, then absolutely pick up that phone or contact Dementia UK. We've got a telephone number that I'm sure you will display, Pete, 0800 888 6678, or we've got a helpline address, helpline@dementiauk.org. And we've got a variety of services that include community as well as virtual clinics and the helpline as well. We're here to support people as best as we can. So, and thanks again for giving me some airtime, Pete. I do appreciate it.
Thanks to Mark, and those contact details again. Phone number 0800 888 6678. And the email, helpline@dementiauk.org. And if you want to find out more about Dementia UK and the new campaign, it's all on the website at www.dementiauk.org. Well, that's it for another edition of the D Word podcast. Hope you found it useful, and you'll join me again for our next edition. So until then, thanks for listening, and take care now.